Oh,
Oh,
yeah.
no.
It's pre-roll time. If you're stressed or you're tired and you just don't have time to cook, trying to get in shape and eat right, Freshly can help. Their delicious meals designed by nutritionists, cooked by chefs, making it easier to eat better. We loved it. Over 30 delicious meals to choose from, ready to heat and enjoy in just 3 minutes. Right now, Freshly offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to freshly.com/JRVP. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to freshly.com/JRVP for $40 off your first two orders. And we've been telling you about Fight Camp for a long time. If you want to learn how to fight from real fighters, not some of these fake fighters, these guys on bikes, you know, with like inspirational messages. No, Fight Camp boxers and fighters, they're badass. They bring the boxing gym to your home. You can measure your progress and start training like a real fighter. Fight Camp offers free shipping with 30-day off money back guarantee. Go to joinfightcamp.com/vanity to get free shipping on Fight Camp. Go to joinfightcamp.com/vanity. That's joinfightcamp.com/vanity. Oh, that's not
fight,
it. We're going
fight the guy in the bike.
We're going three pre-rolls. My kids are getting an extra present this week because we got ZipRecruiter too. ZipRecruiter knows how hiring is difficult and it's so important to find the right person for the job. With ZipRecruiter, your job post sent out to 100 top job sites with just one click. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. As of right now, you can go to ZipRecruiter for free. Try it. ZipRecruiter.com/JRVP. That's ZipRecruiter.com/JRVP. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Oh, that's the highlight of the show. But we've also got Eric Clapton, Large Women in San Antonio, and a whole lot of dead baby penguins coming up on episode 110 of the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
JRVP.
Junior Vice President.
Rolls Royce pull up, black boy hop out. Shout out to my mother and my father didn't.
Hold up.
Mmm. 110.
We made
the
it.
Building. What's that? What's that rap that you were trying there?
It's from the new Tyler, the Creator song "Lumberjack" that I've been playing nonstop. It's like 2 minutes long, but I just have it on repeat in my car, and I like it a lot. I like it a lot. Listen to it.
Big Tyler fan. Your old Droog.
Yeah.
Your big fan.
I played your old Droog for a week straight, and then heard that and was like, okay, this is my new jam. But I'm not on it. I'm not featured on "Lumberjack," so don't get your hopes up. But this has been, it's been a good week for me. A good week with some not so great things thrown in. First of all, you know, some internal business. Joanna Orland is dead. Joanna Orland, if you guys know, is Christie's assistant. She called me to tell me she's moving on. She's moving to an agency. Actually, where she'll be still be working for us. She's going to be working for my podcast agent over at UTA. So she's dead. But she's, I mean, kind of dying. She's laying sick. She's training the new assistant. Christy, my manager, always has like an assistant for years and then they move up and Joanne has ascended into heaven. And so I wanted to give her a little bit of a shout out for all
she's
the work
great.
She's done for us.
I mean, for like 15 seconds, I thought she was actually dead. So that was a tough 15 seconds.
I guess, you know, if you hadn't done 109 other episodes of this, where every time someone gets fired or leaves the company and I say they're dead, I can see how you would think that. But since you have been here, since your name is in the title of the podcast, I would think that you wouldn't have gotten so shook. Other good news this week.
I've been surrounded by a lot of death lately. So that's a little tease for what would Anthony do coming up a little
bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to get to that. Love our death here. My challenge addiction has gotten sad. I think a couple of weeks ago, I told you that I'd run out of challenge episodes to watch, and that was not quite true. I just run out of all the good ones. And now I'm watching the worst challenge episodes ever, where I'm like, it's cringe. Like they have these long, convoluted intros, like the you know, how they, what do they call it? Like the title cards for every episode when they lead in. It's just been horrific. Like there's one where they're in New Zealand and they do like the haka dance, but like all together as a team, and they go through the whole thing every time, and it's beyond bad. But we watch it every single time it comes up. And then it was one where they reverse go into water, where they're at the beach, but so it looks like they're coming out of the water dry. and it's absolutely terrible, but I've watched it 100 times.
What's so the best way to watch the challenge? Are you sober when you're watching?
Most of the time, yeah. I mean, you know, it's a great show to have, like, have your computer in front of you while you watch it. There's not a lot to going on, and even during the competition, you can't really tell. They don't tell you times. They try to like edit it so it looks like maybe the guy who's way in the lead might be beat. So it's hard to super get into things. But every once in a while, someone gets drunk and crazy, and that's always fun. But Erica texted me. Explain this to me. What happened with TJ Lavin? TJ Lavin is the host of the show. He's hosted every episode I've seen and is like the, I don't know, the king of the challenge. He's never competed in it, but it's like his course. He's the host. He's the guy.
He's a BMX rider, right? He's like a, yeah.
So I think he might be retired by now, but he was a big time BMX guy.
We got a email to our email address, jrvpjrvicepresident@gmail.com. And I didn't get any context, but attached was a screenshot and said that they messaged TJ Lavin, and it's the photo, it's his verified account, you know, and I guess they were messaging because he said, also, dude, Anthony Jeselnik said last week on his podcast that he started binging the challenge, and TJ Lavin said, no way. Thank you for the heads up, man.
Which is exactly what you write when you don't care at all. Like if someone had texted me and been like, hey, Greg's dad has really gotten into your stand-up album, I'd be like, no way. Thanks for the heads up, man. Like, and then just never thought about it ever again. But it was funny that you sent it to me as if like, wow, like TJ Lavin's going to change his life.
He's aware of it. That's cool, I guess.
He forgot about
maybe,
it the second.
Maybe or maybe not. Yeah. My dad's into Marin though. He's more into Marin.
We're very much like Marin. Just in terms of numbers that we do, just in terms of listeners and money we make and impact we've had on the podcast community. You know, you can't even talk about podcasting without bringing up the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
JRVP. Junior Vice President.
And then I've been doing stand-up all week as usual, and I had to cancel my Friday show after getting food poisoning. I ordered like late night deli food from Greenblatt's, not Greenblatt's, another deli.
Canners,
yes. Ordered it like late, ate it late, and the next day felt so sick. And then I got over it. It's like a 24-hour thing. I got over it. And then my dog, Rummy, has had diarrhea where it's like the kind of thing where like 3 a.m. he's whining. You got to take him out. You got to walk him in the alley. Then like you think you're okay. 5 a.m., wake him up again. 7 a.m., wake up. And normally he can like hold it and it's cool, but it has not been going away. And it's driving me a little bit mad. Luckily, I have help. Has been helping with this, but that help goes away tomorrow. So I'm going to be, hopefully his diarrhea ends. And I've got to like give a sample of Rummy's poop to the vet. It's like an annual parasite checkup. And I can't give them like a bottle of his poop. I have to wait until it's like, it's solid. And it's been annoying. It's been annoying. Also annoying.
Maybe just put a bowl, you know, just like run after, you know, just always have a bowl with you out on the street and just try to time it. It just like once it starts going, just like stick that bowl underneath there.
I think if I showed up with it, they'd be like, why are you giving us this? Like give us like a solid piece. But it is gross to like, he goes on the sidewalk and then I've got to like smear it up with the plastic bag and there's still just like a puddle of it. It's impossible. Yeah. It's impossible and disgusting.
Wow, waking up in the middle of the night, like poop stuff. It's like, it almost sounds as much work as a kid.
It's like having three kids. It's like having three kids because like one kid waking up in the middle of the night, it's like, okay, I can go back to sleep and just change their diaper in the morning. With Rummy, you can't change the diaper. With Rummy, you've got to take them out the way you'd have to take out three kids if you could only afford two diapers. Think about it like that, Greg.
Right.
Think about it in like three dimensions. You're just thinking about it like on paper. It sounds like a kid. But it's actually way harder.
Right. It's like having a kid, except for like when the kid is about to graduate and like leave the house, your dog dies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you think you think you're still going to be alive to your children when they go to college? The second they turn 18, you're dead to them. They'll just be like, see you later, Greg.
I was going to die. That would be sad.
No way. You're going to have a new lease on life when your kids leave. You're going to start cheating on your wife. You're going to be like, you're going to go through a serious midlife crisis when those kids are out the door, but you will be dead to them. Like you're going to get a lot of like return to sender mail after their birthday. Like they're going to Aaron Rodgers you right out the gate. They just won't even, you won't even exist to them.
There's so many documentaries out there. Like, can't we get like a dig into what happened in the Rogers family? Like made by one of the Rogers brothers or something. I feel like that it's time for that.
I would love it. Hosted by Olivia Munn. It'll be great. it'll be fantastic. We're not going to bleep that one. We'll leave it in. Also, a pain in my ass is I told you guys weeks ago about a homeless woman who would stand out in the corner screaming, "God help us," over and over again. That's gone away, blessedly. I assume she has passed. But maybe she's off with Joanna Orland at UTA now. But she's been gone. But there's like a new musician who's just set up across the street on the corner who just plays different songs that all sound like the same song all day. It sounds like Pearl Jam doing like a run through, and it's terrible. And it's just all day long. It's been
closed doors. It's still,
if I'm upstairs, I can't hear it. If I'm downstairs, I very much can. And he's just going and going. I hope he's making money because it is just brutal. It's like, it's college quad, brutal. And then, my last complaint is I got a new car. I get a new car every 3 years.
Oh, right.
And they're like, "Oh, this one you set up with an app. So you don't have to get, like, when you go in, like the little screen says like guest, or like you want to set this thing up." And it's always like, "Well, you got to do it as guest, but eventually you can go through this process and set it up." And I've been trying to do that. We have to download an app, enter the VIN number, send the PDF to the dealership, then get on the phone and then enter a code into your car. And I've been like trying to do this. The app is crashing. I'm losing my mind. Finally, I asked the dealer who I've been on texting with, like, "What if I don't do this? Like, what if I'm just a guest every time in my car, what does this give me?" And they say, it'll just, when you get in the car, it'll say, "Hello, Anthony." And that's literally it. No. That, and I can look on the app to see how much gas is in my car, are the two things that I'm like, why do cars do this? I don't want to ever get a new car again. And I won't. This is obviously rich white guy problems. But this is my place to let people know that you don't need the app. You can just be a guest in your own car.
I mean, it's probably a different for every car company. Yes. But yeah, it does seem like the computer, that's how, cause cars are going to last forever. Now they got to come up with a way for them to break. So you have to get new cars, and it's going to be this like software. That's what's
going on. Every 3 years you get like a new, it's like, "Oh, the maps are new. You know, the music is new. It's easier to kind of do certain things that I like, but I like finding out as I go." But this app thing is a nightmare. Why you would buy a car and be like, "Okay, great. Buy the car, take it home, and then call us and we'll give you a code to put in so it says your name." Like, why would I care? Why would I ever want to do this? And the app is a nightmare. How was your week, Greg?
I feel like this is the sign of the pandemic being over. You complaining about the app.
Yeah. Well, I haven't driven my car in because they kept calling me to be like, "Have you done it yet? Have you done it yet?" And I'm like, "I haven't been in my car in a week. Stop asking me." But yeah, pandemic is over. I'm driving again.
It really felt over in Georgia, which is where I was this week. To go to Tybee Island to celebrate my friend Chris Wesseling's life, who I've talked about a number of times on here, who I worked with over at the NFL, and Erica did too. And she was down there in Tybee. And it was a beautiful weekend. I mean, it was a tough but beautiful weekend, but that's kind of what I expected. Like people from all over Cincinnati, where he's from, his brothers, and then a lot of people from LA, not just us, but that worked with him. And then this entire island that he basically like knew and was really close to, all kind of celebrating his life, dedicating like a softball field to him. We had like a really nice ceremony and kind of celebrating him by getting loose for 4 days. I mean, like, it really felt like, you know, I was staying at someone else's house. Erica was like in a big house of 10 people, and we got after it. And it was this weird feeling of like, feeling like he should have been there, but also like he would have loved like seeing all the different people from his life sort of coming together and having fun together. So it was a cool way to celebrate him. He would have.
Did you guys play softball? I saw the plaque that they put up on your Instagram.
We played in their team. Like, they had like a local team against us, we were the Wesseling brothers and the LA crew, and they like brought in ringers from outside that barely or didn't even know Chris or never played with him to to fucking beat our ass.
They pulverized us.
Yeah, and they killed us. And they we're playing all of our girls who wanted to play or whatever. You know, Erica was playing, and I know you didn't play, Erica.
I played a couple.
Oh, you did a little. Yeah. Like, you know, everyone's coming in. They're coming in. That seems a little untoward. Like a memorial service for this guy, and they just pounded us and trash talked and reveled in it. Frankly.
Did people get mad? Was there ever any was it close to fisticuffs? Because I would think you're emotional. You're annoyed at this, that they're playing a different game than you are.
We figured out the score early. I mean, they were the guys on the microphone making jokes and stuff. We didn't try to take it too personally, but there's some planning to come back with a better team for round two. You know,
do you think Chris was looking down, upset at all that I wasn't there and not even invited?
Yeah, I mean, you guys did share a Christmas together.
We shared corn. We broke corn together. You know, he was a bro that I would, I would have tried to go. I don't know if I could have gotten someone to take care of Rummy for the week, but I would have gone and I would have raised hell. I wouldn't even played in the softball game, but I would let those other guys know that they were going to catch some heat in the parking lot afterwards. I would have taken that plaque. And I
the problem is they were the ones who, you know, got the plaque made and officially, you know, through a city ordinance, changed the field. And so it was a tricky situation. You know, they're the one, you know, they made really nice speeches before, stuff like that. And we had a great time partying with them all the week. But then when it came to this, I think he would have been looking down and kind of silently pleased, just that they were as ruthless as he was as a softball manager.
I'll tell you what he would have loved is when I ruthlessly did the classic Jeselnik, oops, the bat slipped out of my hand and went into your dugout move. Oops, I went up to bat with three bats in my hand and they all came out. I didn't, that's against the rules. Oh no. Oh, there's a dog on the field. There's nothing in the rules that says that can't happen. Oh, the dog's going to the dugout and biting people. Nothing in the rules that says that's illegal. Chris would have loved that.
He would have. It's weird how I don't know. This happens more with you because you're just you're a comedian and mm-hmm. you can go out on the weekends and just live a free lifestyle. But I was amazed how quickly it feels I was staying at someone else's house and really didn't have a lot of responsibilities other than just having fun for 4 days. And how quickly you can just slip right back into that. It felt like I was 22 spending a weekend in New Orleans.
Yeah, I get to go in a couple of weeks and spend a weekend or a week with my family, which feels like it would be a vacation, but you're with your parents and your extended family that I don't think it's going to feel like it slips. I think it's going to feel like being at home, being with your family. I mean, it's the first time I hang out with my brother since he gave up the sauce. So that'll be interesting to find out what the hell I do for 5 days. I don't know. I hope my family, and I think my family listens to this, or some of them do. I hope they like the challenge. And I hope they like early seasons of The Challenge that nothing even really happens. And it's kind of a letdown because that's what we're watching. Okay. I'm getting them all. I'm getting them all for TJ. TJ Lavin's looking down with a smile on his face next with his arm around Joanna Orland, being like, all right, make your parents watch Road Rules versus Real World. And now it's time for, did we get any notes? Not really any notes, but we were validated. There was an article, I believe in Fast Company, that I did not read, but was sent to us on Twitter, that everyone's having a problem with the Apple podcast app. The Apple podcast app has been a disaster, and that's the one that I use. But people think we haven't done a podcast in months. It's Apple Podcast. It's Tim Cook. Is that who I'm thinking of? Is that the guy?
Yeah, I think, is the one who updates the JRVP feed.
Yeah, Tim Cook is trying to keep me down, trying to keep my numbers down. It's not working, okay? Okay, Fight Camp isn't having any of that bullshit. They're still holding their back, Tim. Tim Cook, if that's a fake name. But yeah, everyone knows the Apple podcast is garbage. And even so, I saw people saying that it was taken off Spotify. People thought that we said something in the episode that got taken, that made it get taken down. We do that every week. And they don't take it down. So everyone who's having problems with the apps, it's a universal thing. Has nothing to do with us or Erica. But if I was going to guess, I would say Erica probably has something to do with it. Like, Erica's not 100% innocent. She doesn't deserve to go to jail, but she deserves some sort of probationary period. And that was, did we get any notes? Now let's take it down to a place that's always on a probationary period. It's Erica's Corner. Erica Tamposi is our producer. We've had her for almost all of them. We love her. Even especially since we've been doing these remotely, it's gotten even better. You miss parts of her. You know, you get to get the personality, but you don't get the scent that kind of like that drove us to do shorter podcasts. You know, to be like, let's wrap this up kind of thing. We don't get that anymore, but we still love her. And she's got the broadcast now on All Things Comedy that I don't know what the numbers are. I don't want to hear them. I don't want to get jealous, but I assume that they are in no way comparable to ours. But I think that you guys should all check it out. So we like to literally carve out a little bit of our podcast for herself to do whatever she wants, whether it's ask a fan email, whether it's play a game, whether it's play half a game and kind of just wing it. We let her do anything she wants. So Erica, shine for us.
All right. So this is from Matt C. As a musician, I came of age having to cut my teeth in crappy clubs with few people watching and those who were giving instant feedback. Now, technology has allowed musicians to hide out in their mom's basement, sending music out to online platforms and getting feedback in a less direct way. Anthony, or to a much lesser degree, Greg, do you feel comedy will be impacted?
Fuck you, Tim. You know, whoever this is.
This is Erica's Corner, Greg.
I'm just saying. He called me out. I'm going to call him out. All right, go on, sir.
Do you feel comedy will be impacted in a similar way? Will open mics where fledgling comedians frequently bomb and hopefully improve be a thing of the past? Will new comedians of the future just send out their material to online platforms and receive feedback that way?
Good question, Matt. Greg, do you want to take this? You want me to?
No, I'm just saying he just tried to bring you just threw me. You didn't need to bring my name up, you know, in a little derogatory way. I saw
he knows you're a fledgling musician. I think it already kind of has impacted in a way in the way you saw YouTube stars and Vine stars. What's the new one? Is it Vine still? No, it's TikTok. People doing TikTok. I read an article about TikTok people being depressed. Because they feel like they have to put stuff out. I think part of that depression comes from not being in front of a real crowd and you're just looking at numbers and you don't know. You do a bit and it doesn't get the same numbers as it usually does. You don't really understand why. And I think that can be psychologically difficult for a performer. But I think like in the way that music has done it, you can get really interesting music out of someone who just played in their basement and made a demo. You know, Liz Phair style, who may have not ever, she probably did live shows too. But I like the idea of just being alone, like Bo Burnham's inside, doing it all by yourself. You can get interesting stuff. But if you want like truly funny, funny stuff, I think it almost has to have an audience component. So I think there will always be open mics. And I think that, you know, the way that people like me, real comedians, look down on TikTok people and YouTube people a little bit because they don't have to go through what we go through. I think there will always be that difference and that will set people apart. It's like, oh, now that Bowflex is the thing, will people stop lifting weights? No, they will not. They both can coexist and they have kind of different outcomes. But I think that people just doing it alone in their room, I think there are problems that go along with that. So I think kids will try it because it's easier. And sometimes you have to be 18 or 21 to go to an open mic. You can be a child and do things on the internet. So I think that'll still be happening. But I think there are issues to go along with it. I don't think either one is better. But I know that one is certainly harder and gets better results. And that's going up in front of an audience and finding things out. Like if I had to just do comedy online and hope that I could probably keep things going on a Patreon or something, but it wouldn't be the same. The jokes wouldn't be as good and it would certainly would not be as fun to just watch numbers instead of hearing laughter and knowing what works and what doesn't. Greg, anything?
It's not stand up if there's not an audience. It's something else. It's comedy. And that can be, and it is already like a thriving other type of genre, like, you know, with YouTube and videos and everything, but that's not stand-up comedy. I mean, the stand-up comedy inherently has to have the audience. That's never gonna go away, like talking, you know, being in front of another human and telling you, that's never gonna go away.
Yeah, if you
there's other things that pop up.
If you could do like a funny backflip, like great, have fun online. But if you want to be a real comedian, and like a lot of those Vine people and TikTok people try to get to the stage because you make a lot of money, you know, selling tickets. I don't think they can. So that will never go away, I hope. Maybe it becomes more popular for a little while, the same way that like improv was popular for a little bit and then kind of dipped a tiny bit. I think stand-up will always be there, just not maybe not as popular as it was or has been for the past 10, 15 years or so.
That said, you said it with music. Like a lot of great music starts with someone doing everything on their own and maybe not being ready at all to play that in front of a crowd. And it doesn't matter. It's fucking great. And eventually,
oh yeah, they're great musicians who can't
Julian
play
Baker
live.
On her last album, like she is an amazing live. I've seen her live, but she like plays every single instrument on it. It's like, you can't do that shit live. Like sounds so perfect in a way that like you can't do that live.
But there's some people too who just have like insane stage fright, musicians who were just like, I can't do this live. But and they get a cult following almost because of it, like early Cat Power type stuff. But
Fiona Apple,
people like,
to some
people,
degree. I mean, she plays Sinead live and stuff, but she's not really that into it.
Yeah, Sinead O'Connor said she's never going to do it again. So I kind of get that, but that's a different topic. That's a different thing. I think we answered this question, stand-up comedy for the win. And that was Erica's Corner. Shine on, you crazy diamond. And now it's time for
What Would Anthony Do?
Nope.
Starring.
Nope. Don't clean this up either. Leave it in. And now it's time for
Ad Copy.
That's right.
It's amazing how often that happens.
Every time.
It's amazing how often the listeners of JRVP tell us how much they've enjoyed Fight Camp when they get it. That's why Fight Camp keeps coming back. Because whatever it is about the JRVP listeners, it's just like these are people who like to punch things and like to stay active.
And kick them. Punch them and kick them.
Kick them. I mean, it's for beginners, but it can also be for experienced boxers. Mm-hmm. You know, people have asked me about that. It's like, do you have to know anything? No, I think it's more fun if you're just starting. But they also have like intermediate and advanced levels with a lot of different paths. And even if you're already like a good boxer, it teaches you a bunch of different skills along the way. And then
your
workouts,
Logans, your Jakes, they can still use this, you know.
I mean, look how well it's worked for them. They are making cash. It also comes with all the gear you need to box at home. It's got a freestanding punching bag, boxing gloves, quick hand wraps. I mean, just putting on the hand wraps kind of makes you feel tougher.
It does. It does. It was the first thing I learned when I got into boxing, and I was so excited when I found out I could do it on my own. It's so cool. I used to think about bringing them to shows and putting them on in the green room before and then taking them off before I went, just because it's like, it's meditative. It's like a preparation thing that you think I'm joking? I'm not.
No,
I ended up not bringing them because they smell
bad. I'm just
imagining
the other people like in the green room looking at you and being like, this fucking guy.
I guarantee if I did actually brought them into green rooms, every comic who saw me do it would start doing it themselves. Would be like, oh, that's what Justin Lick does? Let me do that.
Well, the hand wraps have punch tracking sensors that challenge you to hit a minimum amount of punches each round and allow you to track the journey you're making. You can learn from six highly qualified different trainers, and you can pay for your fight camp over 24 months or less, for less than the cost of a boxing gym, and get it right away. Fight Camp offers free shipping with 30-day money-back guarantee. Just go to joinfightcamp.com/vanity. Again, Fight Camp, free shipping, 30-day money-back guaranteed. Joinfightcamp.com/vanity. Joinfightcamp.com/vanity.
Get Fight Camp, and then blissfully never have to let someone ride past you on a bicycle ever again. Next time someone tries to ride past you on a bicycle and you've completed the fight camp, you don't have to worry about it. You can take them down.
We give Fight Camp like a free minute of ad time every episode just because we like them so much. Maybe we'll do it for Freshly too. Freshly offers chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals delivered fresh to your door. No cooking required. We told you about when we got the Freshly. We're bringing it back into the Rosenthal house. Grocery shopping, that's a pain. Cooking's a pain. You just stick it in the microwave. You just heat it up, and it's ready to go. Your meals arrive
good,
cooked and fresh every week.
Tastes healthy, tastes good, something you'd want to eat. You look forward to it, and it's you feel good afterwards. You're not like, oh, I got to go lay down on the couch. You're like, I want to fight club it. I want to fight camp it up. Where's that guy on the bike?
That's true. It's kind of like it's a good combo meal. You visit Freshly.com, and you can choose over 30 delicious, satisfying meals like steak peppercorn, sausage baked penne, or chicken pesto bowl. And again, you heat it in just 3 minutes. Right now, Freshly offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to Freshly.com/JRVP. Go to Freshly.com/JRVP for $40 off your first two orders. Stop stressing about dinner. I spoke too quickly there.
You get Freshly. Let's say you get a bunch of meals and there's one you don't like. You heat it up in 3 minutes. You look outside and you see someone riding by on a bicycle. Okay. It's been heated up for 3 minutes. It's hot. You can just grab by the base that's cool and just chuck it right at that person riding the bicycle. Throw it right at their face and it's worth it. You feel like you ate. You feel like you just ate a meal.
And you can take, just heat something else up for your dinner, I guess. Heat up another.
You don't need to eat. Eat the bicyclist. Eat the cyclist you just knocked to the ground.
All right. That's Freshly.com/JRVP for $40 off your first two orders.
And that was
ad copy.
And now it's time for
What Would Anthony Do? Starring Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd.
So this, like I said, this weekend was emotional, but rewarding. Felt like the closest I was going to get to hanging out with my friend Chris, you know, one more time. And as I'm going through all this, I get a text as I'm going to fly back to Los Angeles, and it's from Emeka, and she says, "I've got some really bad news," and I'm pretty worried here. And I ask, and she says, "Seaweed is dead. Our turtle is dead."
Oh
and
no!
I think
so
I murdered.
She doesn't
and
just
I
say
think I murdered
bad
it.
News. She doesn't say bad news. The turtle's dead. She says bad news, and then waits for you to respond.
Yes,
she's making this. Like, she's making a meal out of it.
I know, and it was like I was packing my stuff, getting ready to go to the airport, and I was bracing for the worst, and I got it. And she says, "I think I might have murdered him." What would Anthony do in this situation? You know,
okay,
all around.
Okay, so do the kids do not know that Seaweed is dead at this point? She tells you before she tells the kids. What are the kids?
No, the kids already knew. The kids
who found the body. Who found Seaweed's body?
I assume Emeka did.
Why does Emeka think it's her fault?
Well, he was left out, which we do often while we're cleaning the tank. He was out in the backyard, in like a little, you know, bucket basically. And he was no longer moving. So just think maybe either something happened with the feeding system that we were trying out that automatically would feed him while we're going on vacation next week. So we were trying that out. Maybe something went wrong there, or she thinks somehow that he got like fried on the cement in their backyard. Somehow
he wasn't in the shade. Yeah. He was just in a bucket boiling.
And the heat coming off. It does. That part doesn't make sense to me. I think he was poisoned, frankly.
Like leaving a turtle out in the backyard is the equivalent of leaving a kid in the hot car.
Put it somewhere.
But that's what we always do. They like the sun. That's the part I don't get. But maybe it was like too hot because it's bouncing off the sun. I mean, that's what they want to do. They want to bask, you know. And they were just about to take it out to like kind of play with them a little bit, let them go free a little, and then he was not moving. You tell me what you do. Maybe how you would handle it with Emeka, how you would with the kids, the whole thing, I guess.
Emeka, I would be like, I can't believe you're dropping this shit on me right before I get on a plane from this thing. I can't believe this couldn't wait till I got home. Or that you did it over two texts and not just said, "Hey, yeah, the turtle died. I killed the turtle." I would say this is all on you to explain to the kids that you killed the turtle. I wouldn't say the turtle died. Like part of having a pet is teaching your kids that your mother's a murderer. That your parents will kill an animal if they get the chance. And I would say, like, if I were Emeka, I would have been like, you know what? I think the turtle is just sleeping. Let me take it away. Like, well, let me take it to the turtle doctor.
Ooh.
And then the next night, I would feed them soup. And while they're eating the soup, I would be like, you know what? Some turtles don't live forever. And the main reason the turtle has been put on this earth, I'll get to it, Erica. Don't interrupt me. This is not your corner anymore. This is what would I do? Okay, this is not what would Erica ask. That would be a different segment. They're eating the soup, and I'd be like, "You like the soup?" And they'd be like, "Yeah." And I'd be like, "Didn't you like the turtle, right?" And then be like, "Well, guess what? You're eating seaweed. This is turtle soup. Isn't it delicious?" And then they would, instead of having bad memories of the turtle and the mom killing it, they'd have good memories of eating turtle soup. You know? And then the next time you'd be like, "Hey, do you guys want to get a new turtle?" They'd be like, "Yeah, just give them more soup." And that way they learn. They learn what their parents are like.
Just skip right past it. We buried him today. They waited for me to get back home for that. They dug the hole yesterday, but they
waited. Did you take him out of the shell? Did you break open the shell before you buried him? Because I want to know
what kind of question is that? What kind of question is that? No,
it's what would Anthony ask.
His poor little head was still, you know, peeking out and everything. But yeah, we put him in a little hole.
Wrap him up.
Said a couple words. He was a good
guy. Did anybody cry?
No one cried. Walker doesn't seem too. It's a little too early to really put his head around what death is. And Ellis was pretty sad, but she got like ice cream and a toy out of it, I think, because Emeka felt so guilty on Sunday. So they just
do they, you know, want a new turtle? Are they asking for a new turtle?
Oh yeah, yeah, they're expecting another one.
And they want a turtle. They don't want a different kind of animal.
I mean, they would probably love like a dog or something like that, but like a cat or something a little more fun. But we're getting a turtle
right away
for sure.
You're getting another turtle. Are you getting the same kind of turtle?
I don't know. We haven't talked about it yet. We don't know what the strategy is. We got to get a bigger tank. We were just about to buy the bigger tank. I don't know. It's too bad. He only lasted, a little over a year. No, a year and a half, almost 2 years.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's pretty good for a turtle that should have lived.
They can live to like
all of you.
I think another thing I would do. This type of turtle is like a 30-year-old, you know, the 30-year-old. So we only murdered him like 27 years
ago. Yeah, early. he made it a year and a half. Okay. Another thing I would do, Greg, if I were you, before you get the new turtle, is every night after the kids go to bed, I would paint myself green, and I would crawl into the bedroom, and I would be like, Walker.
Oh my God,
Alice, why didn't you save me? And then slowly make my way back out of the room. I'd do that every night for a while until they stopped reacting badly to it. I would keep doing
now
that.
You're
just
talking.
Teach them about the afterlife and about death. And do you think they're going to name the turtle Seaweed too?
No, they want to call him Nori, which is the Japanese word for seaweed. So it's like,
I would get the new turtle, and then I would dig up the old one and just keep leaving it around and be like, oh no, the turtle's dead. And then be like, oh no, he's in the cage. This is the old one, you know, like little pranks on the kid. That way they learn the comedic impact of death, you know, which I think is important. And if I lived closer and I was in their lives more, I could certainly do that. I would have like, instead of burying
I mean,
you the
live
turtle,
in the same city. You do live in the same city.
I would have dug a hole. Yeah, but
I gotta say,
I'm a guest in my own car. I can't drive over there. I would make the kids dig the hole. Did the kids dig the hole? Or did you dig the hole?
I gotta say the hole is not too deep. I assume Emeka did most of the digging, but it's not too deep. It would not take much to go get him.
I would have made the kids dig the hole with their hands, and then I would have been like, "Are you ready?" And then just punted the turtle over the fence.
Oh my God,
that would be funny.
Turtles are great, man. They've been around since the dinosaurs. They don't bother anyone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're sweet.
Yeah, they got no problems except for Emeka. Maybe Emeka wiped out the dinosaurs. I would just put it all on Emeka 100% of the time. When they'd be like, "What do you want for dinner?" I'd be like, "Why don't you ask your turtle killing mother?" I would start calling her Shredder from now on.
Shredder.
Greg doesn't even get the reference.
I do. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Turtle he was power. The bad guy or something.
Fuck yeah, he was the bad guy. He was the bad guy.
It is
you married Shredder.
It is
you had children with Shredder.
A little present in my pocket I can whip out anytime you know that they're pointing out that Emeka's their favorite parent.
You have the turtle in your pocket? Because that would be funny too. It's just to
I'm
pull
just saying
it out
like
and just
well
put
dad's
it
not the one that killed Seaweed kids, mm-hmm. So who's your favorite now?
Yeah. I would use that. I would use that constantly, and I'd be like, "Time to go to bed, kids, or your mom's going to kill you too. Your mom's going to leave you out in the sun until you die, like Seaweed."
I'm really glad she stopped listening. A couple.
You keep saying that, but she listens.
She does. She doesn't do it right away, but eventually, yeah.
She just texted me and was like, "So sorry to hear about Joanna." So I know that she knows. And that was.
What would Anthony do, starring Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd?
Let's get to headlines.
I gotta say, Jeselnik's on his game tonight. You know, some nights it's, you know, it's a long regular season. You know, maybe it's not 100%. You know, hitting every shot, and today it's just like it's the playoff. It's playoffs. It's game seven. Jeselnik's ready.
I'll say it again. Let's get to headlines. Stop mourning your turtle.
And Carl Nassib, a defensive lineman on the Raiders, made big news, great news this week, announcing he was gay, which is making him the first NFL player who will be playing actively in regular season games to announce it like this. And got a lot of support from the Raiders organization, from players around the league. It's Pride Month. We did a Pride episode, Anthony. I don't know if you know about this on the Around the NFL podcast that Erica produces. That was Erica's big idea. NFL.
What was your Pride episode? What did that consist of? Do you guys have like different colored mics? Do you guys let Erica interrupt everybody?
Erica was a big part of the episode, and we taped it in West Hollywood. And other than that, Rocco's. It was kind of like a goofy, normal episode.
West Hollywood?
We went to Rocco's on Santa Monica Boulevard.
They did. We didn't tell them we were what we were doing, and we just did it, you know, because we're gorillas. But the point is that was before Nassib even announced this. So it's just been a big month for the NFL, always painted as kind of like a little behind the times here. Going face first into the future, Anthony.
Yeah, as long as he doesn't kneel during the national anthem, everyone's cool with it. I like this story because people keep saying, oh, he's not the first. Michael Sam was the first. Michael Sam was not the first. Michael Sam never played down in the NFL. And I think a lot of that was kind of the mental torture he had to go through by what he did. But I think it's very interesting to do it in this way. I think this guy, Carl Nassib, did it perfectly in that he waited a few years. He's been on a couple different teams. He's well-liked by his teammates. He's entrenched. And it doesn't seem like he's doing it for what the kids call clout or for money. You know, that guy from The Bachelor who just did it. It was like, oh, wow, cool, brave. And it's like he's doing a reality show. He's going on Oprah. It's like, oh, you're doing this for you. Which I think rubs certainly the gay community or the LGBTQ plus community the wrong way, as it should. And that this guy was like, nope, like I'm cool. I'm cool with my team. I'm cool with my teammates. I'm good with my life. I think visibility is important, which it is. And I'm donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project, which is one of the best things, one of the best projects or the best charities you can give to that I think probably helped him a lot when he was coming up. But I think this is a much more groundbreaking than Michael Sam. You know, Michael Sam like made the announcement and then couldn't wait to like make out with his boyfriend when he got drafted, like almost dead last. Like I don't think he would have made the NFL if he hadn't made the announcement that
Michael Sam taking some heat here. You know, what did he do? All he was a late sixth round draft pick, which is he had the career, the exact average career of a late sixth round draft pick, which is he made a couple practice squads and never quite made it. But that's
I think more his meltdown in the Canadian Football League was more than what I'm talking about. And you know, again, you know, all love to Michael Sam. I think Michael Sam made it easier for Carl Nassib, Nassib. But I do think that this will open doors because he did it in the exact right way. I'm not doing this for profit. It's not a look at me. His jersey is already like the number one seller since he's done this, which is great for the NFL and great for the LGBT plus community. Great for the Raiders. I think it's interesting that he did it in Las Vegas as opposed to like Cleveland, where he used to play, where I think he'll be much more welcomed in Las Vegas. And I'm going strictly by that Sopranos episode where they find out that one of the mobsters is gay and he says, let me keep my job, but move to Vegas because they're much more tolerant there. That's all I'm going on when I say that. But yeah, I've got just an A+ for Carl Nassib. And I love that all his teammates are speaking out for him. And I think it's going to be an interesting season and interesting in a way that like a lot of people are saying, like, who cares? Like people care very much about this. And I think the way that the season plays out will only make things stronger and better. And he's the kind of player, like if he was a quarterback, you'd be worried. You know what I mean? But a defensive end or a defensive lineman, you don't hear their name much. The fact that he's just playing in the games and getting reps will be the win. But if he fumbled the ball, You know, if it's the first gay running back, you know, he's going to get some jeers any chance a bigots get to yell at him. That I think this guy's in the perfect position and just did it in the absolute 100%. Look at me, but don't. This isn't about me kind of way that I think is just perfect. He knocked it right out of the park. And I'm not as mad about it as like Erica is.
You gotta be excited. This is your company, Erica, you know?
Yeah, no, it really like gave me chills to just see it because, you know, there's a lot of kids out there that want to play football, but think they don't belong because they're gay. And mm-hmm. to actually see someone that's gay and be like, oh, I can still be in this league. I mean, it's really, really, really poignant.
And just to have him do it with a smile and not like I've been searching my soul and I have to get this off my chest. Like, just like, hey, I'm happy to tell you guys this and here's why. Like, he seems like he's in a very good place mentally that you mm-hmm. don't worry about him. It just absolutely perfect.
The only thing I'm worried about is his play. Like, he signed a huge contract with the Raiders last year and had the worst season of his career right afterwards and almost got cut and then had to like take a pay cut. So I just, you know, to stay on the team. So he'll be on the team and everything, but I hope there's not too much focus on like, this guy's not like, of course he's not the greatest player ever. He's a solid NFL like professional going out there doing his job, who before this was mostly famous for being like this super dorky, but likable, guy on Hard Knocks, like as a rookie who was like really into finance. That's how I know.
I think that's even cooler is that like him being gay is like the least interesting thing about him.
Right.
That like there, he already kind of established himself as a character and as somebody. I'm just excited to see all the Nasib jerseys out there. People repping and in a way that you don't have to have a fucking rainbow flag on. You can just be like, I'm cool. Look at this.
I like that he's a Raider too. No team broke more barriers in terms of black coaches and black GMs and black players at different positions than the Raiders.
Yeah, no team has fired Art Shell more times than the Raiders. And one other thing, like there was a thing, Joy Behar today, this morning, like made a joke, like an off-color joke, and people were getting mad at her. I forget what she said, like penetrated the end zone or something, like made a joke. Everyone's kind of like, ugh. People were like, oh, should she be in trouble? It's like Joy Behar is like 70 years old. Like, let her make her dumb, like lowest common denominator gay joke. It's okay. But I like that people kind of jumped on it. She apologized. But don't get too mad at old people making really bad old gay jokes over Nasib. He can handle it. He's Nasib.
Why do you keep saying his name so wrong?
Because I just can't do it. Nasib? Nasib. Yeah. Like NASCAR.
Yeah.
Nasib. Congratulations, Nasib. This next headline is also about representation.
big NBA news. We're staying in sports. The conference finals are set, but I'm much more interested in the development that Charles Barkley says he can no longer make fun of fat women in San Antonio.
It's hilarious to me. I love when people complain about cancel culture because I disagree with it. I'm on the record saying it's not a thing and people who complain about it are weak. I love Charles Barkley. I do not think he's weak, but it is weak to be like, every time we talk about San Antonio, I make the exact same joke and Shaq laughs at the exact same joke. And now people are so woke, I can't keep making the exact same joke every time we talk about San Antonio, even though I don't talk about San Antonio anymore because they're not good. He's like mad about a joke that he told for 10 years while San Antonio was dominant. The exact same joke that only Shaq laughed at. That Shaq, who is the size know. Of.
Whenever they would go into it, though, Shaq would laugh so much and that I would laugh. I don't know, just because the whole scenario of it was stupid. It did make me laugh every time just because it made them laugh every time.
Yeah, but I don't think they've really got complaints. Like big women in San Antonio, I think are pretty proud to be big women in San Antonio that, and I'm sure Charles Barkley has run through quite a few I don't know why he like used that as an example saying like, I used to make the same joke every time we talked about something and now I can't do it anymore. It's like, hey, maybe the joke ran its course. Maybe there are other ways to say this, that being like cancel culture has ruined my enjoyment of making the lamest joke possible about what women in San Antonio look like is just really funny to me. What do you think, Greg?
I remember one time they did like a segment where they like interviewed a bunch of hot women from San Antonio and were just like, see this, Charles Barkley? Like they did, the joke did run its course, to your point. I mean, it was a solid 10 years or so going back to the well each and every time. I think his response to that was like, it took them all day to find those five women.
But I mean, but like saying cancel culture is the fact that was just one example is hilarious. Like if he had other examples of like, I can't say this anymore. We should do this segment
again.
I can't do this.
Right.
Yeah. He's like, I'm only going to be able to work for like three or four more years on this show because of cancel culture. That means there is no cancel culture. If you were like, this is my last episode, all those women in San Antonio started writing letters and now I'm gone, then maybe you could make a complaint about cancel culture. But being like, hey, this joke isn't playing the way it used to for 15 years is a terrible example.
I agree with you 100% on that. Of course, it's weak. And the part where he's like, I'm trying to make it to 60. Once I get to 60, like they can kiss my ass. And I'm going to say whatever I want. Like what? You're going to go on satellite radio and it's just going to be wall to wall fat woman San Antonio jokes. Like,
yeah,
I want to listen to that.
Yeah, I remember when Brokeback Mountain came out. It was in theaters and everyone's talking about it. And Beyonce like sang the national anthem, or Destiny's Child sang the national anthem, or did a halftime show at a game. And then it cuts up to Charles Barkley and he's with Magic Johnson, some of the people. And he's like, I don't know how any man can see Beyonce and then still want to go Brokeback Mountain. And like everyone just stares at Charles Barkley except Magic Johnson, who loses his shit so hard. He's like laughing like it's the funniest thing he's ever heard in his life. And even I was like sitting there like, really? Like you said that on TV? It seems strange that I think that maybe it's not so much the culture as it is your sense of humor, Charles. Even though I think Charles is one of the funniest guys in sports, I think sometimes you got to let it go. It reminds me of Norm MacDonald talking about arguing over a joke on SNL one time. And the director said, they're arguing over whether or not to use this joke. And Norm's like, yes, like, no, we're not using this joke. It's lame. And the director says, listen, this is a great joke. I've seen it work 100 times. And Norm's like, that's my point exactly. That's why it's a bad joke. Like your jokes aren't being canceled because of cancel culture. It's that we've heard them a million times before and we're fucking sick of it. So come up with new stuff. There's millions of things to make up, to make fun of the women of San Antonio for. You know what I mean? It's not just being big. Think about how they talk. Think about their intelligence level and then come back to me.
Oh my God. What?
This one next. This one mightn't be my favorite story of the week. It's the Emeka of stories.
Woo! It's about a naked man who broke into a Bel Air mansion recently. I'm not sure exactly how to set this up, but basically, he went into the mansion. The owner was there and confronted him. The naked man breaking into the mansion claimed, "No, I own the place." The owner took off, and then the perpetrator proceeded to try on some of his shorts, go naked swimming in the pool, and then ultimately stomping on the heads and killing two of their pet parakeets.
So the owner confronted him, or was it a housekeeper who confronted him?
No, it was the owner. The man of the house was upstairs at the time this guy came in, and they have a ring. It all seems like an advertisement basically for Ring, because every article about it just shows these Ring videos and always talks about Ring. It's like, he was alerted via Ring. Someone was in the house. He like at the top of the stairs was like, "What's up, man? What are you doing here?" And he was like, "This is my house. What are you doing here?" Which is pretty good response.
A pretty good response. And I like that the guy just walked away. It was like, "All right, the pool's in the back."
See, he's talking to the media and stuff. And if you're the owner, I don't know how I feel about like really broadcasting this story. Because what the owner did is after that guy like started talking back to him, he just like went out to his balcony in the second floor, like jumped off and like ran away. You know, he called the cops and just ran away.
I get that right. I mean, if a guy comes into your house armed to the teeth, that's fight camp time. All right.
He was naked. He was naked.
Yeah, exactly. If he's clothed and he's got guns and knives, then you slide down the banister cool-like and then just jump kick him. They teach you that in intermediate level of fight camp. But if he's naked, you don't want anything to do with that. I would rather fight a guy with like fingers for knives than fight a guy naked. So when he's naked, you're gonna take a second floor jump off the balcony. Maybe he could have just locked himself in the room and called the cops. That would have been a smart move too. But I just do like the fact of anyone breaking into someone's house. And I didn't know about the pool thing. The pool thing kind of puts a cramp in my style. But I like the idea of going into someone's house and just killing their birds, like finding out what pets they have and being like, these have got to go. This is my house now. I don't like birds, and not stealing anything, just killing the birds and then getting arrested. I assume he was on drugs.
I didn't say whether he was on drugs or not, but the crazy part about it is, like, you know, so they knew this was happening as it's happening. So the wife is somewhere else. I think she was, you know, somewhere with their kids, and she's just watching it on Ring. So she just like is watching him. Oh, he's getting into the pool. Oh, he's going to the parakeets.
It sounds like when a grizzly bear is in your backyard.
The parakeet on the ground, and then. Two like horrible shrieks apparently as he steps on the parakeet.
Oh my god.
It sounds like when a grizzly bear is in your hot tub or a grizzly bear is in your hammock and people are just like, oh, look at that. Like, it's like, that's this guy. I want to know if when he killed the first parakeet, what did the second parakeet say?
They shrieked. You know, that's what the mom
parakeets talk
claimed that the second one like sort of realized what was going, like saw the first one guy and started squawking, and then he took out the second one.
I mean, you can't leave witnesses. If you're going to kill one, you got to take the other one out. You got to do it. I wonder if they get new birds, or would the new birds just remind them? I don't know. Bird people freak me out, that I got to think there was some relief there. I wouldn't be surprised to find out this was the dad's doing. He hired the guy to come in and get rid of the birds. That's a good way to do it. Like, if I was going to get rid of a turtle that I was sick of, I would leave town and then come back and be like, what happened? Oh, we got to bury it now? Okay. I think that's what this guy did without the naked person.
I don't know what you're right. Drugs are probably involved. The guy was like 34 years old. He didn't try to grab anything. It's a Bel Air mansion. I'm sure there's some.
Yeah. How'd he get in
there? Shit in there. He just hung out for like, this had to have taken a while. He took a swim, did the birds thing. It took a while for like the police to get up there to even stop him.
Was the birds thing the last thing he did? Was he just like enjoying himself? And I was like, something's off. I'm not enjoying myself to the fullest. Oh yeah, I can kill two birds. I wonder if he thought about, like, I mean, he definitely got arrested and charged. Do you think if he'd been able to do it with just one stone, that they would have given him credit for that?
What do you mean one stone?
Two birds, one stone.
Oh, shut up. So stupid. I'm stupid too. I like that the owner.
Nope, cut it off. Cut it off, right? I'm stupid too. Greg Stupid Too is the name of this episode.
Got it.
And now it's time for
ad copy.
Oh yeah, it's ZipRecruiter. It's like the, you know, it's the Corvette.
Are you looking to hire a new parakeet? Are you looking to hire data. Security?
Ooh, I like the theme to our ZipRecruiter ad this week, because it's more about female-owned businesses. And among all of those female-owned businesses, it's estimated 1 in 3 is owned by a mom. Have you ever wondered how these amazing moms and dads, we'll throw the dads in there, find time to hire for their businesses while juggling their families, their turtles, their parakeets? It's with ZipRecruiter, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/JRVP. ZipRecruiter was founded by a woman, Anthony? Did you?
I assume just because ZipRecruiter's like, fuck Father's Day. Fuck it.
That's kind of what I was like this week too. I was out of town, was not with my family.
You should have hired someone to be the dad. Maybe the turtle would still be alive.
I could have found them on ZipRecruiter. Talia Goldstein. She was a mompreneur. That's the word they use. Besides being a mother too, her personalized matchmaking company 3-Day Rule is constantly growing, and she needs to hire several matchmakers a month. So she uses ZipRecruiters. I guess she's not the founder of ZipRecruiter after all.
Nope.
Talia is not the only employer who loves ZipRecruiter. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
That's smart. On ZipRecruiter just got 2 ads. They got an ad for ZipRecruiter and then an ad for that one, the mompreneur, or mom porn star, I think is how you're supposed to say it.
No, mompreneur, it's Talia. It's her matchmaking company, 3-Day Rule. But she's just one of the many people who love ZipRecruiter. Maybe she used ZipRecruiter.com/JRVP the last time we read this ad. And now she's just living it up, getting great employees. The special offer is only good at ZipRecruiter.com/JRVP. ZipRecruiter.com/JRVP. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
And that was
ad copy.
What's the next headline?
All right, so Eric Clapton, at this point, like if it's any of our younger listeners, he's mostly known as like the guy who was a joke in Jeselnik's Thoughts and Prayers.
I still get
special.
That people
I think
say,
it was so, that special. It was that one, not the last one, right?
Yeah. I think it was Thoughts and Prayers and not Caligula. Yeah. People still bring that up to me as their favorite joke. Like famous people have come been like, I love my favorite joke is, and they quote it correctly, which I'm always always shocked by. People be like, what would you do if you saw Eric Clapton? He must know about this and hate you for it, which is fine. I do not mind Eric Clapton hating me. I've never liked his music. I've never liked him. And he's given us more reasons not to like him lately.
Yeah, he, I don't know if you've been tracking it, but yeah, he's been a vocal anti-vaxxer, an anti-lockdown guy. Him and Van Morrison made some shitty, like, anti-lockdown songs. Yeah, they made more than one. Yeah, it's
which is it's pretty a terrible rough. Idea and just bad. Yeah, bad all around. Everything.
All around. And so Eric Clapton mentioned in a recent talk he had to one of these anti-vax groups, he's noticed like all of his famous musician friends aren't like really returning his calls anymore. Like he's just like calling around and they're basically ghosting him, Eric Clapton.
I love when people say horrible things or do something really stupid and terrible and just show themselves off to be like an awful person. Like to say, excuse me, I have an opinion about vaccinations. Okay. That you can have a different opinion, but then to like produce songs about it with other famous musicians is super a super weird thing to do. And then to keep on talking as if you're going to be the spokesperson for vaccination ignorance is ridiculous. But then to try to get sympathy by being like, oh, you know, because I'm telling the truth, my friends aren't texting me back. Why do you think your friends are ghosting you? They don't like you and you're embarrassing yourself 100%. This is like the second worst thing to happen to you, Eric Clapton.
They probably didn't like him before either. It's like when these things happen, if they were your friends, they probably would have interceded earlier here and like tried to talk to you about it. But you were the type of friend, Eric Clapton, that they probably just were like looking for reasons. Like, okay, it's finally we can stop answering.
He must Eric Clapton must have been insufferable. I bet every black person, every black musician who saw Eric Clapton walking towards him was like, oh fuck. Always gonna want to talk about the blues. Like Eric Clapton sucks. Yeah,
I do love hearing Bomani Jones is great on music sometimes. And he every once in a while, he takes a big swing at Eric Clapton being incredibly overrated as a guitarist. He is sort of that guy growing up, at least for me, where kids who were like kind of into guitars but wanted to sound smart and just be like, Eric Clapton, man, he is the GOAT.
Clapton is God. I remember like seeing the graffiti that Clapton is God written on things. So it'd be like next to the Van Halen, you know, logo, but Clapton is God. And then listening to it and being like, this fucking guy, this guy's the guitar God. This guy sucks. Eric Clapton sucks all the way around. My favorite Eric Clapton story was that he was in love with George Harrison's girlfriend and that it like destroyed him. It like sent him into like a deep depression because he could get any girl in the world. At the time he could have stolen anyone's girlfriend in the world except for one of the Beatles. Like the Beatles trumped Clapton all the way around, that even though he was like, I would give anything for this woman, she won't even look at me because she has George Harrison. And I love that about George Harrison. Rest in peace, George Harrison, Seaweed, Joanna.
Oh, those Tasmanian devils.
Speaking of dead animals, this was a Jeselnik special. This wasn't even on the list. I found this and brought
this. I was surprised about this one. It does not necessarily fit the mold of any type of story we've done before. It's about these little baby penguins. There were 3,000 pair of them at one point, living on this small, like 45 square mile island in Australia, that have been completely wiped off the island. by Tasmanian devils. The Tasmanian devils have killed every last baby penguin.
See, I love this. The picture that came with it was great because the Tasmanian devil looks fierce but kind of cute still. You know, you think of Tasmanian devil as like as the Tasmanian devil from Looney Tunes, everyone's favorite, besides Bugs Bunny and maybe Daffy Duck. But when Taz shows up, you know, you're having a good time. I like that. Like, how long did they coexist on this island?
Well, so it happened because some disease tumor was taking out the Tasmanian devils like a decade ago. And they were all dying. And people were worried about it, like environmentalists and stuff, that all the Tasmanian devils on this island that were, you know, indigenous to were dying. And so they introduced 28 new Tasmanian devils into the island 10 years ago. And those Tasmanian devils just like started fucking and killing all the baby penguins over the course of 10 years.
I like the idea of the Tasmanian devils getting together and being like, we got them all. Like, we finally got them. Like, they just hated the penguins, and they just, like, they ate them, of course, but they could have eaten anything. But they wanted to kill all of these penguins and finally got the last one. Like, the last two must have been like, we are so screwed. And the Tasmanian devils are just waiting. Like, they, I wonder if they, like, drew it out. Was this over a period of years, or was it just, like,
a decade? It was a decade. From that point where they brought in the 28 new guys to, like, keep the population going. 3,000 pair. So I guess that's 6,000 baby penguins. I don't know how this works. It's this rare type of little penguin that never really grow up to be like bigger. They're called baby penguins because they just always look like these cute little furry babies inside of a Tasmanian devil's stomach now.
I like to think that like for 10 years they peacefully coexisted, and then one day the devils were like, hey, these motherfuckers never get bigger. You know what I mean? Like I bet if a Tasmanian devil broke into your Bel Air house and he saw one of those, he would kill it. He didn't even swim in the pool first. He would just go straight and kill it. This is a very anti-bird episode. You'd think it would be anti-turtle, but it's very anti-bird. And I like that. I just like the idea of like them looking at each other like, what do we do now? Like, what's next for us? What else on this island looks like a baby that we could take out and kill thousands of them? You know, what would your choice
just be? Imagine being like, you know, if you make it, you're down, it's down to 10 baby penguins like left on the island, and they've got a counter, you know, like a, you know, they have like an electric scoreboard of how many are left at all times. And like, you know, it's down to like 8.
I don't think it was electric scoreboard. I think it was like numbers on a board that they pulled one down. Like they pulled down number 9 and it's number 8 underneath it. And they finally got to pull down number 1 to 0 and just had like and just, you know, as Tasmanian devils do, just spun around in circles.
If I know Tasmanian devils, I've seen them at zoos. They're pretty cute. I mean, they're an interesting looking animal. Baby penguins, though, if you're the last one, if you see that number tick down to 2 and it's you and your buddy, like, are you feeling proud or are you just like, shit, this is going to suck?
I guarantee the last two took their own lives. I guarantee the last two like backed up to the edge of a cliff, like put their fins together and just fell backwards. You know what I mean? Like the woman in Last of the Mohicans, which is a reference everyone gets. The blonde girl. They did that.
I don't get it.
I hope they try to reintroduce baby penguins, only they're poisonous, and then see what happens with the Tasmanian devils then. Just have them fight it out. A poison baby penguin? I'm into it. Australia's fucking crazy. They can introduce something to that island that'll make the Tasmanian devils pay for the baby penguins.
I was just thinking, like, what if Daniel Day-Lewis came out of his retirement to do Last of the Mohicans too?
He's frozen in time and he wakes up on this island and he's like, where are the baby penguins? And like, they've all been killed. And he's like, just give me 2 muskets. Give me 2 muskets and I'm going to run and shoot them at the same time and hit whatever I shoot at because of this weird movie.
I'm stupid.
And now it's time for
Choo Choo.
Recommendation station. Greg, what stupid thing you got for us? And don't recommend some turtle burial site.
I mean, what, my backyard? I'm going to recommend a movie that probably, you know, a decent amount of people have seen. Not as many as Goodfellas, which, by the way, I'm still getting responses from people who hadn't watched Goodfellas before me. And they like it too. And I'm getting more references. I see these references now all the time. A whole lot of stuff is becoming crystal clear to me.
No, unless you're lying to me, unless you're talking about your children. If your kids were like, we've never seen Godfellas, Dad. Thanks for the heads up. I'd believe it.
No, barely. I've gotten at least like seven people, but they're still trickling in every now and then. This movie has not been seen by as many people, but it should. It's Nightcrawler, starring Jake Gyllenhaal. I don't know if you saw that back in the day.
I saw it in theaters. Anthony.
Oh, you did. Mm-hmm. It took me a decade to see this movie, and man, I really love it. It's such a great LA movie. And it's such a good, like, Jake Gyllenhaal stepping into just kind of acting crazy movie, which he like took to another level with Okta, which I like too. But he's great in it. It's just it's a great premise. Him playing, a news cameraman who is, you know, first on the scene at like grisly crime scenes. And if you haven't seen it, it's well worth the watch. It's like such a perfect LA movie,
a great movie, great performance. And I think it's also, I might be wrong, I think it is the big screen debut of Riz Ahmed.
Academy he's Award, really good in it, and he has a huge character. Role in it.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that was like his coming out party. People were like, oh, this guy's actually really good too. But it's Gyllenhaal's movie. And I think it's one of the first ones he did where it was like, oh, this guy's really interesting. Like, he can play any character and knock it out of the park. That's not a good movie without Gyllenhaal. But yeah, it's a great one. Erica, have you seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see it 10 years ago?
I mean, it's all I got this week. What can you do?
Yeah, I'm sort of in the same boat with you, Greg, because it's like we've been traveling. I had a bachelorette party the weekend before, so I don't really have anything new. But you know what I am reading right now, just for fun, is The Hollow by Agatha Christie from like 1946.
You sound like just super excited, like we're going to like start jumping up and down. Like,
I thought you might have read it. I don't know.
You picked up one of your grandma's books. That's great.
Literally.
I mean, Agatha Christie was a great writer. I may have read one of her books. I've seen really looking forward to that new Armie Hammer movie coming out, Death on the Nile. Can't wait to see Armie Hammer back up on the big screen. But yeah, I don't know if I've read much of her, but I'm sure it's a fun, interesting read. How far into it are you?
Like right to about the murder, which is the exciting part, but it's like 1946 murder. So it's, you know, it's cute.
Translation. Erica was like 25 pages into it.
Yeah.
Felt like, that's not true.
I'm thinking the Agatha Christie murder.
You don't need to throw something out. We could pass some weeks.
No,
you could have been like, guys, I saw the cover of this book. I got to tell you guys all about it. I'm going to recommend a book I read weeks ago. I've been meaning to recommend it, and I keep on reading stuff that is even more interesting and recommending it. So I'm going to go back and recommend this. Before I do that, I want to give a shout out to last week's Greg Rosenthal recommendation. I read the Copenhagen trilogy. I just finished it today, and it was amazing. Like, to the point that like my friend was like, why are you so pissed off today? And I was like, 'cause I'm finishing this book and it like makes me mad. The last 100 pages just piss you off in a way that I think everyone should read it. It's just a great book dealing with addiction and talent and the difficulties of growing up. But I loved the trilogy. Tried to do more research on it and couldn't find much about it.
So book.
It was three books, and then it was put together as one short book called the Copenhagen Trilogy. Okay. But each one is like birth, like childhood, dependency, whatever. But they are it's definitely worth checking out. So good on you, Greg. Good on you for that. That's like the Goodfellas of books. My recommendation, I've been referencing it the past couple of weeks. I like oral histories, especially of like new scenes coming up. We talked about earlier in the podcast, like a scene where people don't have to get in front of crowds. They can do everything on their own at home in front of their computer. One of the things you lose is the community of that scene. And I always like reading, I've recommended Meet Me in the Bathroom, which was an oral history of kind of when the Strokes came up and that like the new rock and roll scene in New York. And this is called Everybody Loves Our Town, an oral history of grunge by Mark Yarm, Y-A-R-M. It just talks about kind of the beginnings of, you know, like Mudhoney and bands like that in Seattle. And even like further back than that, the bands I've never heard of that kind of made that sound because they kind of didn't have anyone else no one came to their town. Bands would tour and they would avoid Seattle because it was too far out of the way to hit. So they had to kind of make their own scene up. And it's fun to watch that go from like just a kind of mom and pop, we're doing it for ourselves, to Nirvana, to people trying to copy Nirvana, to hearing Pearl Jam going through hell, and then finally Candlebox. Someone describes Candlebox as not just the nail in the coffin of grunge, but the coffin of grunge, and hearing Candlebox talk about it is hilarious. So I definitely recommend reading the entire thing. Once again, it's Everybody Loves Our Town, an oral history of grunge. I mean, it starts off with like a chapter about how much everyone hates the word grunge. And now if you say it in Seattle, people get pissed and nobody wants to take credit for being the first to use it, which is just kind of the sense of humor that the book has. And of course, there's a lot of addiction, a lot of loss in the book, but it's a great read. So check out Everybody Loves Our Town, an oral history of grunge by Mark Yarm. And that was Recommendation Station. Eric, I didn't hear you. I don't know if you didn't give me a choo-choo there. Give me another choo-choo.
Choo-choo.
I heard that one. And now, Debbie, get us out of here.
Whoa, Nelly Furtado. That's a spicy meatball. Is that okay, Greggy?